You know, sometimes, ooh, we were pretty loud over here. Sometimes you just kind of got to let it ride. Sometimes you just got to let it ride. That's a new song with Arooj Aftab and Krungbin called Rat Ki Rani. Don't know what any of that means. All I know is I heard it this morning for the first time, and I was like, add to my list. You're here with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR. I'm your host, Issa Arian. We do this every Tuesday. We are broadcasting from CITR, but also it's important, like always, we acknowledge that we are located and broadcasting from the traditional ancestral unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh nations here. From the deepest part of the woods on the lower mainland peninsula, most western part, you know, pretty much deep into the sea here. You know, we do this every week from CITR. What we like to do on the show is we talk about what's going on in Canada, what's going on in the lower mainland, what's going on here in Vancouver. Sometimes we talk about what's going on in the States, around the world. You know, we even have a interspatial story. And one of the things that I do a lot of, that do research for work. So one of the things is I'm always trying to, you know, what we call in the business, laddering up to a particular insight. So taking in a lot of information. And one of the things is here in, especially in Vancouver, I find myself to be most conscious, but we are often talking about space. We're often talking about space as in what, like, let's talk about it in the sense of, do we have enough of it? Is there enough of it to go around? How can we get people who have no space more space? And the people who have infinite amount of space, how much space do they really need? And it's a constant question. And some of those times, sometimes when I think about it, if you've ever been on the show, listen, you know I have a lot of thoughts about a lot of things, and we are going to talk about. Listen, we have a lot to talk about. I was supposed to have a guest today, my friend Effie, who coming in to talk about the election that's happening in a few weeks and what we need to know about that as it pertains to supportive housing in the downtown east side and how the mayor's race is being impacted by the incumbent mayor Kem Sims not showing up for the people of the downtown east side and subsequently not showing up for all Vancouverites and how that's going to impact. So stay tuned for next week. Next week, we are going to have a special guest. So if you have any questions or you have any specific things as it pertains to housing that you'd like to talk about before the election, stay tuned next week. You can call in at 604-822-2487 at 604-UBC-CITR. You can mark it in your calendars. Listen, it'll be a very good and informative segment because Effie's always teaching me about what's going on down in the street. She is, when I think I talk about on the show, talk about activism and people who talk a lot and you know, who are not in, whose actions don't align with their words, and that's not Effie. So if you want to talk to or listen to someone who's downtown, always active. I met Effie at the Wet'suwet'en protest in 2020. And yeah, I think is a much needed voice in Vancouver. So if you want to tune in next week, please do. You can also continue to donate to the fund drive. You can do that by just going to CITR.ca. You can donate under my show's name or just out of the goodness of your heart. We talk about all of the things that CITR does and the space that it creates. And one of the things I saw was interesting because we always talk about kind of the changes and how, for me at least, I love coming to the campus because you're always hearing, you feel like a little bit infused with hope, where I saw a flyer about research assistants forming a union and coming to a discussion about forming a union for research assistants. And it made me really think, because I have been talking about a white collar union with some friends and the hesitation in which I feel like there was a very short period where, you know, millennials were the young change makers, and I wonder if all generations just feel like they just missed the ball, but it definitely feels like we were Charlie Browned, you know. And it's nice to see afterwards that doesn't mean the ball is missed forever, because we got a lot of work to do. When we come back, I got a lot of good music. I have a lot of things to talk about. And when we come back from our musical break, you know, I just want to talk about a little bit of something personal before we get into the news and what's going on here in the Lower Mainland. And, you know, I'm going to do that. I've been listening to, you know what? I'm not even going to tell you what I'm listening to. I'm just going to put it on. This is Alicia Myers, and I want to thank you.
You send me some.
Back It Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. Listen, you can tune in, you know, digitally, analog. You can figure it out. Tell a friend to tune in. Listen, every Tuesday we have Crimes and Treasons from 8 to 10, and then you have me, Off the Beaten Path, here 10 to 11. So your Tuesday should be locked in. And I, if you listen to the show, and if this is not your first, you know, you're listening to the show, you know that, one, it's Ramadan. And for my second year in a row, I am fasting for Ramadan. And I'm not Muslim. It's, for me, last year it came to, I wanted to fast because I felt like I personally didn't feel like I was able to connect with the protests in a way that felt like I was, I didn't feel like I was connecting in a real personal way. And so when Ramadan started, and you know, a majority of the Palestinian population is Muslim, and they're fasting for Ramadan, and for me it was like a way to connect myself to the struggle while also being able to use the my fasting as one, as like a little tiny sacrifice for myself, but also as a way to start a conversation and kind of chat with other people to talk about, you know, what was going on. And so this year, doing it again with some friends and also reading at the same time. And it feels, it's really, let's say, like, it's really easy to talk about. It's really, one of the things that I find that I feel like in this past year that I have used, you know, I used the time to not just, you know, not just reflect personally, but having conversations and talking and learning from other people, learning from, you know, where people, other people are getting their information from, and just kind of, and watching over the past year, what you see is that it is so incredibly, it's so incredibly frustrating to watch something that just, you don't need to know too much to know that I shouldn't be seeing kids blown up on my Twitter feed daily. You know, I shouldn't hear about a ceasefire, but never be able to even believe that, you know, that that's even worth whatever medium I heard it in. And that there's people who exist, this is their existence every day. And like, I'm always curious to what end do people feel like, you know, the people who are, I don't even know if at this point people are like pro, matter of fact, that I would say I live in a bubble, like where my bubble is very clearly aligned with the struggle of the Palestinians and Palestinian resistance. And it's hard to see what's going on. And even if you believe that, you know, Israel should exist, and in the manner and methods in which it is existing now, continuing to spread its borders and colonize the land in which people are living on, it's hard for me to imagine that somebody sees what I see and says that's okay. And one of my questions is, as always, is like, what is the end goal look like? I can't imagine. So once all the you know, Palestinian people are extinguished or moved, you know, moved forcefully or out of the land of, like, what's next? Like, where does it end at? Like, that's one of those things where I find about, you know, a book I'm reading kind of compares talks about colonization, but compares Israel to other colonizing forces that we are more familiar with. And I think one of the things that we've seen kind of with the United States is that there is no end. You know, there is no end to colonization. One of the things we saw with the British Empire, there is no end until it ends, right? And like the same thing with the United States, we're seeing right now that there is no end. Even at the limits at which the United States exists, it still cannot help but not just threaten expansion, but promise it and really bring that to the conversation around, you know, what that looks like, especially here in Canada. Like, that's something that's felt. It's like there's no end to colonization. And so it's, you know, I always go back to Ta-Nehisi Coates' book when he talks about being a victim doesn't protect you from being a monster in your next chapter. And one that's something that I always think about, particularly as it pertains to, you know, when Ta-Nehisi Coates writes it, he's not talking about just Jewish people. He's talking about Black people as well. But in his book, he's talking about Jewish people, and particularly Israelis. And it's one of those things where it's halfway through Ramadan, and yesterday I saw the continuing of bombing during the holy month, and it just feels like it gets to a point where it's like, what does it look like at the end? Anyways, and so like, yeah, what does it look like at the end? And kind of me and my friend, me and one of my friends who is fasting with me, we talk pretty regularly about every day or every other day, and, you know, just kind of seeing how each other's doing, you know, talk about the books that we're reading. And today he was telling me that he just came back from a wedding that was in Miami to see a friend that we grew up with in middle school. And I made a joke. I asked, was there this girl who was my first kiss, was she at the wedding? And then he told me, no, she actually, she died of brain cancer last year. Sometimes, you know, you hear about somebody passing that you just kind of always imagine, just even if they were not in your life, they just kind of exist in their life in the ether of life, like in the universe. And when I heard that, it's just a reminder that one of these, the people who you pass in your life, they are living their lives, and they are going through their own things. But also, it's just that life is so fleeting, and these moments are so ethereal, you know, that they are both real and feels, you know, wistful at the same time. I'm not really sure what I'm thinking, but it's really just kind of, I don't know. It feels like. Where is the time going, you know? Where is it all going? And then also at the end, you know, some people get to the end faster than others, and it's like, wow, all of that life, and it's just gone. And it just really kind of tripped me out, and just kind of, one, made me think about, well, my life, but then also, you know, you can kind of get in a cycle, at least for myself, where you start to think around, you know, what you have done and what you have not done, and what you accomplished, what you have not accomplished, what you want to accomplish. And, you know, there's really no reason. I mean, there's lots of reasons to worry, but also no reasons to worry at all. Yeah, those two things are not really connected, but that's what you get on the show. You get a lot of my thoughts and my musings, and just kind of how That's how we move through the world here. It doesn't make any sense, but it makes a lot of sense in the world. When we get back from a nice musical break, we're going to talk about just kind of, you know, what does space look like in Canada? What does space look like in Vancouver? Where some space is being eliminated, and then also where are potentially some opportunities to add some. I know that sounds like a lot of mumbo jumbo, but basically they're tearing down some buildings that we would rather not, and some big retailers are leaving. So what does that leave us? A lot of space, and people don't know what to do with it. Let me get back.
She said, take your time, what's the rush? I said, baby, I'm a dog, I'm a mutt. She said, take your time, what's the rush? I said, baby, I'm a dog, I'm a mutt. I'm a dog, I'm a mutt. I can smoke no Reggie, so pardon my bluntness. I see past pretty faces, so I got trouble trusting. But I let my guard down for you. Said I put my guard down for you. Said I'll be vulnerable, so you can break my heart if you want to. She said, take your time, what's the rush? I said, baby, I'm a dog, I'm a mutt. She said, take your time.
To London and brought two bitches from Ibiza back. It's eating on them Afro Latinas. Got me aphrodisiacs. I'm squeezing that. Pookie for that coochie. I'm a fiend for that. Say, baby, I like it raw. Go ODB with that. And I knew you was a freak like that. Trying to light me down. I'm just not peeping that. These goofy groupie hoes is the reason that I'm still screaming. Where my dogs at? Mud it out, slut it out. Fuck my girlfriend, then I took my baby mother out. Ready for the winter time, I done smut the summer out. Kept it in the family, my stripper hoe brought her cousin out. Fetty never running out, Porsches and them Hummers out. Money showers caught my accountant, I spent the dumb amount. Neighbors waking up while I'm fucking like, what's the fuss about? I hit her once, she say, why you rushing out?
She
baby,
said,
take
your time, what's
yeah.
the rush?
Why you rushing like that? Why you rushing like that? Yeah.
I said, baby, I'm a dog.
Back it off the beam path here on 101.9 CITR.ca. You know, sometimes it takes me a little bit to get in the groove. That was Leon Thomas, Freddie Gibbs, Mutt. So, yeah, so we're just talking, you know, just kind of rapping a little bit about space. Not enough of it. Yeah, and it's just Is that where we go when it's all over? Not sure. So if you haven't, if one of the things that if it feels always like the day comes too soon. So Vancouver has a habit of, and this is one of the things that I have seen in my almost 10 years here in Vancouver. One of the reasons why I moved here is that I wanted to be a part of a, what I felt like was a, you know, a newer growing city and kind of seeing what that looked like. And I came to Vancouver with the idea of I was going to go into development so that I could, you know, I had dreams of being a, you know, dreams of how helping to design a city as it grew. And one of the things is what I have seen is that it, while there's a plan, it there never really feels like a cohesive plan. Because one of the things is people complain about Vancouver, especially people who try to make Vancouver a home for themselves, is that, well, one, you know, Vancouver is no fun, but also every time Vancouver gets a little bit of something, just a little bit of something, the city allows it for a little bit and then takes it away. So we saw earlier in the year that they are not, the Mural Fest is over. So the 10-year run of the Mural Fest is over, and believe that coincides with the development that is happening at the motel on 6th and Main. The City Center Motel is going to be, it was a motel, then it was changed into artist studios for the last 3 years. While, you know, Vancouver has that thing where once the land is bought, they can't do anything for 3 years, and then they turned it into art studios. And it was really kind of the center of the Vancouver Mural Festival for the past few years, where they would have a kickoff party and then a like basically an end of the week party. And you know, you would be able to go to the during the culture call, you'd be able to go to all the people's studios, and it was like nice small studio spaces for people right in kind of the center of the city. And what they're doing is they're tearing it down to put up a 24-story building and a 22-story building. One of the things that they will note is that 20% of the new build will be below market rent, but that means that 80% will be twice the market rent. Like, that's the one thing about renting, about the language that they use. So, like, it's one of those reasons why my spirit never let me become a developer, just because it's, I mean, and this is something that they know. This is something that, you know, everybody knows who puts these numbers in. This is something that the CBC, the writers understand, that when they say that they're going to put rent at 20% of the units will be below market, is that those 20% are actually going to be at market for what it is now, and those, the 80% are going to raise the market rate, especially kind of in that Main Street kind of corridor. It's going to raise the rate around everywhere, and those will be above market rate, and those under market will be at market. So they're not doing anybody any service, any favors by this development. And it feels like and even while they say they're going to have 50,000 feet of cultural, 50,000 square feet of cultural spaces, it won't be enough. I saw a statistic, the East Side Art Society shared a report that says there's been over 460,000 square feet of artist space in Vancouver that has been lost since 2009, and it's declining at about a rate of 40,000 square feet per year. And so it's a very it's one of those questions that we continue to ask each other because, you know, it's just, this is just me and you talking. We continue to ask each other, which is, how does the city expect people to make a life here if there's no art here, there's no cheap places for people to make art, there's no place for artists to live and exist, there's no place for young people to send their, you know, for people to send their young kids to daycare, there's not enough seats in the schools, there's not enough, people can't afford it. Kind of, what is the vision? And also, there's no nightclubs. So like, it's not even that they, you know, that the city wants young people to kind of exist in the city. It feels as if, you know, it is a, but even, I would say like a resort town, but even resort towns have, you know, places that are cheap for people to create art and make art because they have to be able to sell their little trinkets and things like that. And, you know, it feels as if there is like a rejection. And I find that there's two kind of parallel kind of thoughts that I have kind of around one of the things that we are kind of like where we're existing in right now. Whereas the only thing that's sacred in the world, or at least in my world, in kind of my North American world, is money. The only thing that's sacred, the only thing that's revered, and also some type of godlike devotion to optimization of your own personal productivity. Those are the things that I believe to be what is driving us down this path of what it feels like of no return. Because when I think about what, like, nothing sacred anymore, what that means to me, it's that I'm not a religious person. Like, I don't believe, I believe organized religion has done a lot of damage to the world. But I also believe that it is, you know, that it's necessary for people to believe in something bigger and outside themselves. But there once was a point where there was a lot of things that felt sacred to us, a lot of things that you wouldn't sell out. Like, we might have talked about this on the last show, but I remember when sellout was a bad word. Like, I remember calling my cousin a sellout. I called my cousin Diggy a sellout, like, as an insult. And him, like, he didn't, like, tattle on me, but, like, told, you know, like that. Like, he used to call me a sellout. Like, you know, and that was like fighting words. Like, you could fight over that. And now it seems like there's nothing sacred, even yourself. Like, we are constantly selling ourselves out just on the sense of, listen, it is hard to exist in this world without that. Like, you know, we're constantly trying to make trade-offs between your own self. And, like, I was on a work call today, and talking with a client who talks about, you know, opening emails on vacation. And I said, like, listen, when I'm on vacation, I turn my shit off. Like, I delete the app and everything. Like, I'm, you know, there has to be something that is sacred and away from this place, because, like, something has to exist that exists in a way that's special and that is unadulterated. Because there are, like, these, it's how you kind of remove the soul out of everything. And so that's one of the things that I feel like all of these spaces that have been created and activities that people have poured their art, you know, their hearts into, you know, when it comes to murals or when it comes to art studios here and, you know, kind of the things that people are doing, if we don't treat these things as sacred, we don't treat these things as special, people will just stop doing them. And if people stop doing that, people stop making music, people stop creating art, people stop finding places to showcase it, then we're just going to continue to kind of devolve into this robot world. And it gets pretty, it's pretty uninspiring to like imagine that that is our future. But, you know, there is some hope, because one of the things is that they talked about on, you know, in the news this past week, is that British Columbians are getting creative with live music venues because they have to. Like, there's no other choice. I went to a show for a friend last week, and his show was in a, a really rich person's living room. And except for this was like the biggest living room I've ever seen. Not true, but like it was pretty big. And it was like, yeah, it was one of the biggest kind of spaces I've seen. And, you know, he had a film showing of his live performance, and kind of a, it was a very interesting, you know, kind of a cool mix. And you have to, at first, honestly, very much weirded out. But after a little bit, you know, kind of settled in and was like, oh, this is cool. Like, and it's nice to be able to have these types of venues or events or just kind of things that are going on, because it allows for people to kind of showcase their spirit. But these, I don't think that all of these spaces need to be provided by developers. I don't think they need to be provided by, you know, the government. Like, I just think that the government and these developers need to allow the spaces that we have to continue to exist. Like, I obviously believe that there needs to be more housing. There needs to be not just below market rate housing, because, like I said earlier, we understand the economics of that and how it's in fact not as generous as we'd like to think that it is. But also, when, you know, when a developer says that they are going to have, you know, spaces, you know, they're going to have a 300,000 square foot space for artists, you know, for culture, whatever they say, we already know that that space is, one, going to be locked. It's going to be limited. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be the open, creative space, you know, that's just not sponsored by some corporate entity. Those things just kind of do not align with each other. Like, there are corporate sponsored art things that are good, but overwhelmingly, we see how those turn out. But, you know, we'll continue to see people fight for space here, and people fight to stay in their spaces here, because that's it. It feels as if the city is not necessarily working with or for the people, but especially in that area. Like, I feel like Olympic Village, Main Street, there's so many apartments, especially in Olympic Village, that you see that are, you can look up in the windows and you see the lights never come on. They just don't exist. Like, it's like, yeah, you can build housing for people, but if the housing isn't built with actual people in mind, it'll be built for speculators. And capital thieves. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about space and why you might want to stay away from it. At least if I was you. When we get back. In my head.
Tell me why. why you in love with me? Is it money or the fame or the fact that I'm living in a lab of this luxury? Tell me why all of a sudden you wanna come kiss up with me? Used to pass a nigga by like tumbleweed. Used to play me to the side till I got a little buzz like a bumblebee. Now you can't get enough of me. Why you falling in love with me?
Can I have a little honesty? Can you have a little trust in me?
Just a little bit.
Tell me, are you really in love with the thought of me? Look me in my eyes like I'm on my knees, begging please.
Tell me, are you really in love? 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 Tell me, are you really in love?
Must be the swing, money in the bank. I do what he can't. I'm top rank, flex like Shabba Ranks. Make these bitches faint. I'm a star, I'm so fucking raw. They know who I are, she ain't all. Diamonds got no flaws, I'm so down to Mars. Yeah.
Baby, come on, tell me if you really just wanna build or really just tryna chill. Ain't no time to kill, baby, speak up. Time is money like my 40 millimeter. Tell me what's the deal, baby, make me a believer. Even Lord knows I really don't need her. If you ain't in love, baby girl, me neither.
Some Joey Badass, some Chloe. One of the things that you'll see this week is that McDonald's is again testing a vegetable-based burger. And I felt like, you know, I feel like it's interesting being in market research and kind of understanding the trends of where brands are going and coming from. And it feels like, you know, that vegetable, unbelievable burger really came and went. That's one of the things where I find so interesting on what comes and sticks and what goes, comes and goes. And I think we talked about, I might've talked about this on the show, is that, it, you know, the unbelievable burger, that type of thing is not actually better for you. It just makes you feel better. But the people who are avoiding fast food are not avoiding fast food because the beef is not high quality. They avoid fast food because fast food is not high quality food. So that's one of the things where I'm really skeptical, like, or it's just kind of like where it feels like these companies are not coming out with any good ideas. And, you know, you can blame people like me, but also, you know, don't blame me. My ideas are fucking amazing all the time. If you're listening to this and you're a market researcher or you're in strategy, you should hire me because, I got great ideas all the time. But these ideas are not good. And not only are they not good, they're just recycled and old and stale. Yeah, because, like, what you see is that, yeah, it's McDonald's is to put on Unbelievable Burger. This shit is trash. It was trash at A&W. It was trash when it came out. It was trash when you eat it at your house. Like, if you're gonna go and get McDonald's, you're not going to stop and be like, you know what? Like, and this is something that I do in my real life. Like, this is not, you know, I'm not speaking from research. I'm speaking from, this is my real life anecdotes where like, I make compromises with myself around when I eat McDonald's sometimes. Am I going to get a soda? Am I going to get French fries and a burger and a soda? Or am I just going to get two of those three? And so for me, it's, you know, it's kind of making those types of those small decisions, those small, you know, promises to myself that helps me, you know, kind of rein in my decision. I've never been there and been like, you know what, I'm going to go to get McDonald's. But you know what? I'm going to stop at the burger. I'm going to get the Unbeliever burger because it's better for me. No. No, no, no. Not over here. I just don't think it works. It just, we'll see. It's being rolled out here in BC, in Ontario, and Quebec. And, you know, I know they brought the McRib back, but it just seems like they're just running out of ideas. I was standing in the aisle, standing in the toothbrush aisle with a random stranger, you know, as some older man. And I'm definitely in the age of my life where I'm just talking to strangers in the aisle and just being like, hey, isn't this crazy? When I say that, I'm just saying like, cause that's just what I do. Looking at the toothbrushes. And so I have an Oral-B toothbrush where you kind of, you know, you have to get the extra heads once you feel your head's getting a little grody, you're like, I got to got to find a new one. Went to the store. Listen, you can't just buy one head. I'm like, I don't need five of these things. I just need one. Five costs $59. That's crazy. You can't just buy one. You have to buy at least three. Three is $37. I'm like, that's crazy. Because you can buy a brand new toothbrush with two heads for $22. And you're just like, how does this make any sense? I'm standing next to the man. He's looking at, there's like eight different versions of Listerine. Not different flavors, eight different versions of Listerine. Then there's Scope. He's staring at the fucking mouthwash. I can just tell this man was confused. He couldn't believe himself. And I'm like, man, this is all my fault. You know, I work in marketing. I'm like looking around at this. I'm like, we don't need all this choice. Like, capitalism has brought us five pack of toothbrushes. All I want to do is clean my teeth. And I haven't even gotten to the fact that there's like Ultra Clean, Ultra Clean Max, whitening with cross, Pro, Plus, Budget, Value. There's so many different types of toothbrushes that they have, all being sold for $57. I can't tell which one do I need. So what I did was I just got the regular ass toothbrush. I was like, you know what? I can't deal with this. I'm just going to get a regular ass toothbrush. Even though I have now an electric toothbrush that's turned into a sneaker cleaner. Just because I just refused to pay $57 for a five pack of toothbrush heads. Like, I don't know. It's just out of principle. I just feel like that's too much money for a bunch of plastic. Like, I know those toothbrush heads could not have cost more than a few pennies. And you're not going to fucking get me. You know? I would just exit. I would exit the game rather than playing it. And I find that's something that we just need to do more often, is just exit the game rather than playing it, because it's crazy. It's crazy. Honestly, the things that they ask us to do, it's nuts. Listen, if you've been here in Vancouver and you've been kind of seeing what's going on with the tariffs and what's going on with America, shit's going crazy. But you have seen that Tesla has taken a big hit. I've seen that Elon Musk has lost 40% of his net worth since basically January 1st. And it's not likely to go up anytime soon. But listen, he's not going to go to zero. And, you know, at the end of Trump's presidency, he will still be the richest man in the world. So it's not like, you know, there's no only so much solace I can take in the fact that he's lost that much net worth. But also at the Vancouver International Auto Show, which is happening this weekend, they have pulled Tesla over safety concerns of people boycotting and people setting them shits on fire. And also Tesla's just catching on fire. So they have pulled Teslas, which is, if you've seen one Tesla, you've seen them all. They're nice. I like riding in Teslas when they're Ubers, even though I feel like my Uber should be cheaper because this person's not paying for gas. But, you know, I don't get to make those type of decisions. But it's just, it's kind of crazy. You know, it's just really, really wild out here in the streets. You know, and kind of with the tariffs, what it has led to is people kind of reconsidering whether they should go to the United States or whether they should not go to the United States. And one thing that I tell people who think they should go to the United States is I'm like, listen, you can't afford it. Like, that's one thing about, you know, boycotting the States is easy for me. I simply cannot afford to go. Like, I mean, and that's home. So, like, everywhere I go in the United States, I got someplace to sleep. You know, I got someplace to sleep and someplace to stay. And still can't afford it. It's just too expensive. So stay your ass in Canada and go, you know, there's lots of places in Canada you can go. Listen, we don't have a Florida here. We don't have a Florida here, you know, and for better or for worse, because Florida's fun, but Florida is Florida. So, you know, if that's where you want to go, you don't really have a choice. But listen, when we come back, listen, it's the last music we got, but this news could save your life, like legit, especially if you're a man and you're balding. And you think you're about to go in for your last hurrah, and you're thinking about to just save it, and you know you think you're about to just figure it out all by yourself. Listen, stay with me. After Full Crates, bring it back, and I'm gonna let you know.
Hold up, wait a minute, bring it back. Bring it back.
Back with Ultimate Path here on 101.9 CITR. Listen, we don't have that much time, you know what I'm saying? We don't have that much time, so we're gonna just kind of dig into the end and listen. So there is a 6-month investigation into a hair loss drug. Finasteride says it has caused sexual, psychological, and physical side effects that have lasted months, if not years, after people have stopped taking it. So Denise Turner sits by a photo of her son, Mac Turner, who suffered from side effects from finasteride, and he experienced fatigue, anxiety, tetanus, and a plethora of physical symptoms until he took his life. And so if you've never heard of finasteride, it's Propecia, and it's one of these drugs that basically you take it before you lose your hair, and you keep taking it, and it's supposed to keep you from losing your hair. I know it's very interesting. It's like, I was talking about this with a friend earlier this week or last week, talking about, you know, our hairlines that are retreating, and our, you know, and our thinning hairlines from the top, and just kind of like, you know, how do we feel, you know, about it, you know, and kind of, you know, would you explore trying to hold on to it, and kind of like, you know, how does it make you feel? It's like, you know, about yourself, about aging, about being a man, and things like that. So I can definitely understand that there's a lot of anxiety and, you know, emotionality around, and also a sense of self around people's hair and making and losing it and balding and things like that. And things that, I mean, we make jokes, but people are going through great lengths to make sure that they maintain a full head of hair. And there's pharmaceutical companies that are completely taking advantage of it. And so it doesn't shock me one bit to see that Propecia, not only did the pharmaceutical manufacturers deny the claims that Propecia is impacting people's hair, but how can a drug that you take orally that keeps your hair growing, you know, keeps your follicles in your head, not impacting your brain, how you think, you know, how does your psyche and things like that. And it's, yeah, I mean, it feels like it's impossible to not impact that. However, you know, people take that, and not only are they dealing with their own personal anxiety, but when you add in the medication to it as well, I can see how that can and could be debilitating. So if that's you, if you are, you know, worried about your hair, listen, you're worried about your hair, you're worried about, you know, how do you feel, how do you look to people, you know, how do you look to women, how do you look to maybe men, how do you look to your family, how do you look to yourself when you look in the mirror, just remember that they like everything, man. You know, that's one thing, is you can always find someone who likes you for the things that you got. Because listen, if you like to play video games all day, they like to play video games all day. You like anime, they like anime. You like working out, they like working out. Your hair is only going to limit as much as you let it. So remember that. And stay tuned to Off the Beaten Path. Let me do this every week.